Welcome to another episode of Backlash Podcast. This week we're going to talk to Clayton Spiess with Thistledew Outdoor Adventures. Clayton is a guide up in the Eagle River area, but we're going to kind of touch on, I guess, everything, anything, all of it. And now we're in 20-minute conversation worth. So we got to make this intro quick, Brad, because you know how I am with these episodes. We're trying to keep them to an hour, and this one with Clayton's conversation alone is going to put us well over the hour mark. It's just unacceptable.
Well, that's unacceptable to you, maybe, but I think the listeners will probably enjoy it. So that's the main thing.
All right. It was a good conversation. It always is, but I was just teasing anyways.
No, I know.
But typically, how we go, right? I mean, we're usually at 45 to an hour conversation, and that's the end of it. So,
well, I think you got a whole 36 hours to put this one together, so you should be good.
Oh, yeah, we're way ahead of time. It's only Monday night. I mean, plenty of time tonight. Nothing else I'd rather do. So, anyways, we're going to make this intro short and sweet. If you're looking for gear for your next musky fishing adventure, make sure you check out TeamRhinoOutdoors.com. New to the website, hopefully I'll have them actually checked in time, is Musky Mayhem Tackle. We just got reloaded on that. Single girls and rabid girls and rabid squirrels and all that stuff. All the rabid and the girls and the squirrels, they've been selling really well, and we should be reloaded on some of that stuff, according to what Brad's telling me. I didn't open the box yet. And if you're looking for stock color quad dogs, white, black, Dago Sucker, Twinkie, BL special, we have them back in stock. So check out TeamRhinoOutdoors.com. And I will send it over to Brad because he wants to talk about world famous big bladed flashy boo bucktails.
Well, it's pretty simple. You can go to MuskyMayhemTackle.com and check out any of our different things that we make. Make a huge array of all kinds of different baits. So anything blade related, come check us out at MuskyMayhemTackle.com.
All right. And one last thing, if you're, want to keep up with us, go check out Team Rhino Outdoors on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and you can do the same for Musky Mayhem Tackle. You can also check out what Brad had going on this past winter with Mayhem's 10,000 casts. Team Rhino Outdoors does a little bit of YouTube stuff as well. And then don't forget about the Team Rhino Outdoors Musky Fishing solo podcast, all other ways that you can keep up with your, we'll just go out on a limb and say it's your favorite podcast. We know it is. Maybe it isn't. It probably isn't, actually, but I'll say it anyways. So that's it. Let's go dial up our conversation with Clayton Spiess. Thistledew Outdoor Adventures. All right. Our guest this week is Clayton Spiess with Thistledew Outdoor Adventures. Clayton, thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule to talk muskies with us. It's the first time we've ever had you on the podcast. So let's just do what we normally do on an instance like this. And let's talk about, history. What got you involved in musky fishing? Why did you get involved in musky fishing? And then let's talk a little bit about your guide service. So I'll kind of hand it over to you for a minute.
Yeah. Well, first off, thanks for having me on tonight. I really appreciate it. And yeah, I was born and raised in Eagle River and grew up basically fishing with my grandpa. And whenever a few weekend warriors, my uncle and cousin and my uncle's best friend and his son and would come up to fish on a few weekends during the summer and in the wintertime, the three of us boys were all about the same age. Basically, we grew up together and have been friends forever. And as soon as we were able to hold a musky rod, they would have us out in the boat with them musky fishing. And my first, so I'd go all the way back to my first musky rod was a split bamboo, like a 5.5-foot rod with an old Abu Garcia, I think like C3 or even maybe before that, with some mono line on it that would bird's nest like every other cast. And probably lost more of my grandpa's baits than caught fish, but I don't know. We loved it and couldn't keep us off the water growing up. Every chance that we got, we were out there fishing. So that's when I started. And basically, the older I got, the more I wanted to fish. As I got my driver's license, I was able to take my grandpa's boat out when he couldn't go fishing, and I would start fishing on my own and with friends, and start getting more involved in the community, learned of Muskies Inc., joined that, joined local Muskie leagues and started fishing those. And the more I did it, the more I loved it, the more the addiction grew, the more expensive it got for me. Finally purchased my own boat probably 14 years ago. I still have it to this day, although it is for sale because I finally got a new one. But that boat served me very well for many years, caught a lot of fish out of it. And yeah, just kept fishing more and more, started dabbling in some tournaments here and there. And now I fish the PMTT trail for the last 4 years with a good friend of mine, a couple musky leagues, and more recently has started guiding now for the last 3 years. This will be my third season guiding, second season full-time, I guess, as full-time as I can be. And I suppose I can just keep rambling. What got me wanting to guide, obviously, the more time on the water that I can be on the water, the better and happier that I am. But guiding goes all the way back to my great-grandfather, who had a resort up here in the Eagle River area on a Pickerel Lake off of Highway G. I'm sure some people have probably heard of it. It's a pretty small lake, not the easiest to get into, but was just one of the first ever resorts up in the area way back when Highway G was a two-lane or just a one-lane gravel road. Basically, you had to pull off to the side if people wanted to come at you, you know, from the other direction. And my great-grandfather, basically, it was his vacation resort, but they'd spend the summers up there quite a bit. And he would guide for muskies, and he built up a pretty good clientele. And one particular person, which I find this story very interesting, is from the old Dillinger clan, would be Whitey, was one of his regulars. And he would take Whitey out and a few, you know, the other guys, and they would fish all the time. Basically, what he'd do is he'd row around the lake. I don't even think they had outboard motors, and they'd just kind of push off in a rowboat and row these guys around until they caught a fish, and everyone would kind of take turns. The boats weren't really big enough for multiple people to cast, so I think only one person got to cast at a time, and they'd basically just take turns casting. And my grandpa would go out with them as a kid and kind of learn the ropes, and then it turned into my grandpa rowing people around until he got his own motor. And he did a little bit of guiding himself too, I think, back in his early years, but it didn't last very long, because what ended up happening was Whitey really enjoyed that resort and decided one day that he was going to buy it from my family, basically told them a price of what he was going to give them for it. And he would give them a little lot across the road that he could build or put a trailer or whatever he wanted to do with it. But he was going to buy that resort from him for this amount of money. And my grandpa didn't object to it or try and raise a stink about it. So that's kind of a little bit of history of the North and history of my family as far as the fishing and guiding and where it came from. And my guiding business, Thistle Dew Outdoors, was from my grandparents' business. My grandma had a sewing business that was called that. And then with my grandpa guiding as well, I think used that name a little bit. And I just thought it would be really neat to kind of carry on a family name, even though it probably isn't recognized very well in searches or anything online for trying to find me or as far as musky fishing is concerned. But I'm going to try and make a go of it with the name because I just think it's pretty cool.
You know, with the price of properties these days, I think that I'm going to just try that. I'm going to just go up to some place we'll pick Pelican Lake this year. I'm just going to go in there and be like, hey, I'll tell you what, this is what I'm going to give you for this property, and just basically take it for them and see how that goes over for me. I'm guessing it's going to go really well.
If you can, you know, keep a straight face with it, you know, you might have a shot, maybe not. I don't know. You got to be very convincing. That's what I've got to say.
you need a couple goons is what you need, Jeff. You just have a couple goons walk in there with you, and you know, you tell them how it is. That's how you get it done.
Oh, well, what are you doing this summer?
I'm your goon now, huh?
you'd make a good goon, Brad.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Maybe 20 years ago.
You look like you got that no-nonsense look about you. You know, you could really get some stuff done. I think you should come on up to the Northwoods with me, and we'll go knock on some doors and get some properties.
That sounds fun. You know, we were talking a little bit earlier today, Clayton and I were kind of about what we were going to discuss and whatever. And, you know, I guess I was unaware of some of that history. You know, that area that you're in does have a ton of history. And I think it's kind of one of those spots where I think a ton of people would like to go up and book a trip, because there is just a plethora of different musky lakes to fish as well.
Yes, there's such a huge variety of different waters and styles of fishing that we can do up there. I think it's, you know, it's better than anywhere in the country, really. You know, there might be more fish to catch per acre other places, or, you know, obviously there's larger fish that you can catch in different places where we're from. But as far as a variety, and, you know, you can go to one lake and it'll be super dark and, you know, tannic, or, you know, a flowage of some sort or a chain of lakes, and you drive 10 minutes and you're into a clear 80-foot deep lake where you're fishing bait or sandgrass or something completely different. It's just, it's really awesome. You can fish any way that you want to really out around there.
You know, Clayton, one thing I picked up in your, when you were talking, is you said you guide as much as full time as you can. What is it you do outside of guiding?
Oh, there's almost a jack of all trades. As much as I can get my hands into different things. I was a carpenter, built houses for probably 20 years, and most recently have quit doing that. Kind of had a little bit of a life change. My wife passed away from cancer just over a year ago. And when that happened, I decided that I was just going to, you know, life's short. You just never know how much time you have here. And I'm going to do everything that I can to enjoy as much of it as I can. And I wasn't enjoying building as much as I was when I first started it. And a whole bunch of people I've worked with, really good friends that I've made over the years, you know, have hurt themselves one way, shape, or form to the point where maybe they can't do what they used to be able to do when we were younger. And I just wanted to try and get out of it while I still could. So I really don't do any building anymore, as little as possible. I've worked for a zip line and aerial adventure park company for 14 years as well. And I still dabble a little bit in that. Actually, I'm currently in Iowa right now on a job in the springtime when there really isn't a whole lot going on back in Eagle River. There's all kinds of courses that need inspecting and guides that need to be trained and adjustments and stuff on these courses. So I travel around quite a bit this time of year, and I can basically go, I've been in the industry enough now, I can go just about anywhere on any course. I can tell you if it's safe or not. I can inspect the gear they use, run them, and make sure they're running properly, and then train guides to, you know, run and take tours safely on these adventures. So that's one thing that's, it was a really cool job. I really enjoyed it. It was a ton of traveling. I don't really enjoy traveling so much anymore, but this time of year kind of works out. So with that, once summer starts, like you said, guiding as much as I can, as much as I can get booked up. When I'm not doing that, I'm working for another good friend, Jeremy Barber, who him and his son also do the PMTT trail and fish our leagues and stuff up there, big into musky fishing. If you haven't heard of Trevor, shout out to him, that kid, young stick that's in high school right now. He's going to be phenomenal. He's really got a mind for it and absolutely loves fishing. So one way or another, bass or musky, I think he's going to be really famous someday. That kid's got it, got what it takes to do it. And Jeremy is a very good supporter of that. But I work for Jeremy. He's an excavator, and he kind of took me on with me being able to work around my guide schedule. Basically, he takes me as much as I want to work. So it works out right now really well that way.
Well, first off, our condolences on, you know, everything you've had to go through with your wife. I can't imagine how difficult that must be. But it's, you know, I guess if we're looking for a silver lining out of it, you know, your mindset is right, meaning like time is short and you definitely need to find something that, you know, makes you happy, and at least you're working towards that. So that's a good, you know, a positive first step. But quite honestly, I mean, it's I like I said, I couldn't imagine, you know, going through what you've had to go through. It's got to be difficult.
Yeah, I wouldn't wish that on anyone. Even my work, I don't really have any enemies, but people I don't like, you know, it's unfortunate, but everything happens for a reason, I guess. And just try and be as positive as possible. And thankfully, I have a great support system, my family and a ton of friends. And, you know, the muskie fishing community itself has been so supportive of me and all the people that I've met over the years through tournaments and leagues and, you know, going to these shows and everything, just been great and just kind of keeps me driven and pushes me to continue on and, you know, pursue, you know, everything that I can when it comes to muskie fishing, I suppose.
You know, Clayton, you were speaking about doing the different leagues, the PMTT. Let's talk about that a little bit. Let's go down that path. What got you into it? How long have you been into it? And, you know, maybe describe some of those leagues that you're involved in first, and then we'll flip into the PMTT.
Yeah, so I got started, I believe it was towards the end of my high school career, probably when I was 18, maybe 19 or 20. I got started in the Monday Night Muskie League in Eagle River. And I think at the time, it was probably one of the largest leagues that I know of in the country even. And to this day, I have to say, it's got to be the biggest. And, you know, I'm going to claim it to be the best, especially now that I help run it. But I've been fishing that off and on. There was a few years when I was traveling with the zip lines and I didn't get to fish. But basically, since I've started, I've been with it and have worked my way kind of onto the board and am the treasurer now, and have just been, you know, helping to build it up and make it better and better every year for the past probably 6 or 7 years now. And it really, truly is an amazing league. As far as I know, there's nothing like it anywhere. We have, you know, 12 teams of 6 people. So there's 3 boats, 2 people per boat. We have bars or establishments, some bait shops that sponsor each team, which costs a little bit of money, but one-time fee or whatever. And then every night, every Monday night, we fish from 4 until 9. And after fishing, we all get together at one of the sponsor locations, and most of them put out a spread of food for us, and we bring a bunch of raffles to raffle off, and we give away prizes for first, second, third, for just showing up at night, all sorts of stuff. And it's just kind of grown to something I never could imagine, where it seems like the more we get for raffle prizes, we have a giant banquet at the end of the year that, you know, just about anybody can go to. Usually it's, you know, people that fish the league and then their significant others and a few other random people, friends of the league or whatever, and sponsors that show up at it. But we have these giant raffle tables. And thanks to, you know, Jeff, for one, at Team Rhino Outdoors and a bunch of other sponsors, I've learned that we don't ever want to get a handout or anything. We're definitely willing to pay. And the more money we spend, it seems like the better the stuff we end up getting for prizes. And the better the prizes we get, the more money people are willing to put in to these raffle tables. And so far, I haven't found a way to lose money. It always seems like we end up coming out ahead or at least breaking even. And we're giving away live imaging, 360 imaging, transducers, Helix 10s, you know, rods and reels, nets, baits, you know, anything and everything you can think of. And there's thousands and thousands of dollars that we give away every year in cash and prizes. And it always seems like we end up with a little more money at the end of the year than what we start with. And, you know, I definitely have to thank our sponsors for that, because we wouldn't have that without them. But I've been in that one mostly. And here and there, I fished, you know, a couple other leagues in the area. Basically, you could probably fish a league in Eagle River or close to Eagle River one night, every night of the week, just about, except for maybe Friday or the weekends. There's a league, Eagle River on Monday. Tuesday is, we call it Chain Pounders League. It's a smaller league in Eagle River, which I fished that last year for the first time, and her team happened to take first, but I got spanked in Monday night. So that was really weird. We were fishing a lot of the same water. I just couldn't catch them on Monday, but Tuesday it worked out. Wednesday night is Three Lakes Muskie League. Thursday, I think, is like St. Germain, Saner, Minocqua League. I know there's Rhinelander League. So like all these towns have their own leagues, and it's just, it's pretty cool. It's pretty crazy, but that's so much fun. Absolutely love doing it.
So if somebody wanted to get involved in those leagues, can you kind of give us a game plan of, are you accepting more teams or has it grown to its capacity? How do you go about that?
So I think we definitely are always looking for a few fishermen, sometimes with a boat, sometimes to jump in with a boat, like a single angler that is looking for a partner. We do get teams come and go every year. So I always say if somebody comes up with a team and a sponsor, to definitely get a hold of us. We have a Facebook page, is probably the easiest way. The Monday Night Muskie League on Facebook. There's also, I don't run it, but my friends run the Tuesday Night Chain Pounders League, and that's also on Facebook. Shoot us a message and we will get back to you within a day or two. We have our opening night, basically sign up meeting, coming up in the middle of May for the Monday Night League. And that's when we put posts out on Facebook, reminders of that. And if there's anybody that's looking to jump in and go fishing, show up at that meeting. If you can't get a hold of us any other way, just show up and we try and get you in with the team. Usually it almost always works out. I don't know if I've ever turned anybody away that wanted to fish and was willing to basically fish with anyone. And a lot of people have made new friends. It's been really cool that, you know, people have never met before that, hey, let's give it a try. We'll try fishing together and end up being really good friends, you know, and stuff at the end of the summer.
Well, since we're on the topic, let's talk a little bit about Eagle River and kind of what it actually offers.
So for fishing wise, obviously it's like, I don't even know how to begin to describe it. I mean, obviously the variety of different lakes and stuff that you can fish, but there's a really good stocking program and really good natural reproduction on a lot of these lakes. And you can generally go out. There's quite a few lakes where you can go out and have action, if not catch fish, pretty much just about every time you go out. If you spend a day on, like, let's say the Eagle River chain, which is really popular because of our leagues, we have, you know, this chain, Eagle River chain, gets absolutely pounded. Not going to lie, all summer long between Muskie Leagues and the Weekend Warriors. And then you have all the boating traffic, which I know a lot of other bodies of water deal with that. But it just seems like there's such a good population of fish, and these fish just, you know, like to eat, that at some point, you know, you're going to have some action out there. And a lot of times it's actually really hard to break away from that. If you're really, you know, you can get on a bite and basically stay on it out there. It's pretty easy body of water to guide on. And somebody's got to want to go somewhere else or want to do some other kind of fishing for me to really leave that body of water. A lot of times when I'm guiding, it just, we can go out there and just catch fish all the time, pretty much. It's really fun. So you have that. You have a lot of resorts up there. There's a lot of Airbnb, so a lot of lodging options for, you know, people if they want to come up and vacation. A lot of other things to do besides just fishing. And even when we're guiding too, I get clients sometimes that, you know, they want to take a break or whatever. And if we're on the Eagle River chain, we can just go for a cruise, you know, from lake to lake. You know, they're all attached with channels, so we can easily access multiple lakes. There's restaurants and bars on these lakes that we can stop at and get lunch and different stuff, you know, take breaks. There's places to pull up and go for a swim. I've, you know, had kids in the boat that were warm and like, hey, can we just stop at a beach and go swimming? Yeah, no problem. You know, whatever they want to do. So just because we're out fishing for the day doesn't mean, you know, we're stuck to just fishing and grinding it out. There's other ways to have fun. And, you know, you can kind of get a whole tour of the Northwoods basically in a day on the water, or, you know, a day. Weekends spent up, you know, in the Eagle River area.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's no shortage of places to fish up in the Northwoods, right? But, you know, one thing, I mean, the chain, in my opinion, the Eagle River chain, has probably some of the most pressure, I would say, in the Northwoods. Maybe Three Lakes, I don't know, that one's probably similar. You know, how is it that you guys combat that, and do you find that it affects the fish much up there, or is the pressure something that bothers the fishermen more than the fish?
I think You know, honestly, I think the pressure, the boating pressure for sure, is something that probably bothers the fishermen more than the fish. And honestly, I feel like, you know, not to get talking about tournaments yet, but these pressured waters and the variety of waters that we have up here have really made the anglers that are doing these tournaments a lot more diverse and a lot more successful in tournaments. If you look in the last however many years, you know, with Raylan Osfer absolutely dominating, you know, the trail for years, and, you know, the people that seem to catch fish very regularly, they're, a lot of them are from this northern half of the state of Wisconsin. And I really think that dealing with the pressure, dealing with the variety and fishing so many different kinds of bodies of water has really helped make myself a better angler. And I'm sure a lot of these other guys and my friends that are from up here as well. I'll tell you, so many times too in league on Monday nights, you know, we, middle of summer, hot days, there's tons of traffic out. Usually the traffic starts to taper off around 5 or 6 o'clock. People are going in for dinner and stuff. So we've really, most of the time for leagues, we have the water to ourselves for the most part. But if you look back, I've been taking care of the fish points for the last probably 4 years. And if you look back at the fish slips from all these years, it's almost a guarantee every week there's going to be a good run of fish that are going to get caught in the first hour, if not the first half hour, when all these boats are still out there. These boats are churning up the bottom as they're going into these channels and cruising too close to shore and stuff. And yeah, it might cause a little bit of damage, but it's drawn all the bait fish into this churned up water, plus it's drawn muskies in. And as much as I hate being cut off, I can't tell you how many times you'll cast into the prop wash of a boat that cuts in between you and shoreline, and you get a fish out of there, or you get a follow right behind them. So it is annoying at times, but it does also kind of help us catch fish at times.
It's always amazed me, and I've said this on the podcast many times, but if you start thinking about who does dominate the PMTT, and it's usually somebody from really pressured waters, and in a lot of cases, it's usually the Kentucky fishermen, because they deal with tons of pressure too. And I think it's funny, you know, pressure is relative to your own mindset, right? And so one of the things that I always consider is, you know, I hear people say, oh, it's pressured. It's really, really pressured. I don't know if you've seen pressure until you've been on a body of water like what you're talking about, or you've been on Cave Run. It's a whole different game. It truly is. And one of the things, I know I've said this on the podcast in the past too, is Jason Summers, which I don't know how many people know his name anymore, but back in the day, he started Chaos Tackle, and he was a PMTT fisherman. And it's always blown my mind. I think about it all the time. I'm going to say it again. One of the things that he told me that he would do when he was fishing in the PMTT is it didn't matter the body of water. But if you were stuck on one structure and that's your structure that you're going to fish for the tournament, he would literally just pack it up, drive 100 yards away from that spot, and come back and approach that spot with a new mindset. And I think that's super, super interesting. And I think it's kind of a cool idea if you are struggling on a spot that's really pressured or a body of water that's really pressured. It allows you to refresh and kind of approach a spot with a brand new thought and process.
Yeah, I would totally have to agree with you on that. As far as your mindset and your mood, you know, we like to say positive vibes only in the boat. And, you know, when you're fishing angry or frantic, you're not going to catch fish. When you're happy, joking, having a good time, laid back, you know, that's when the fish are going to end up biting. And, you know, if something's frustrating, You literally do. You got to stop and take a breath. If you don't drive away from the spot, you just got to like stop and sit down or stand there for a minute, put the rod down, take a breath, you know, crack a joke. All right, pick it back up. Let's start. All right, let's do this. You know, let's have fun. This is what we're here for. We're here to have fun. And 100% that is such a game changer when you can keep, you know, the attitude positive in the boat.
Well, I don't think that's only in guiding, right? I mean, you think about, in tournaments, it could be in guiding. It could be just on a pleasure trip. Maybe you're at Lake of the Woods and the weather isn't cooperating or whatever it might be. But at the end of the day, you hit it on the head. I mean, you truly want to make it fun, because when it's not fun, you're just not in the proper mindset to win. You know, it's just the way it is.
Exactly. Definitely. Yeah. And being able to read too, like for guiding, being able to read your clients and know kind of when they're starting to get tired, not pushing them past that point, you know, well, you can't have that mindset of going into a day like I have to put a fish in the boat. I have to produce a fish, you know, maybe I'm not going to get tipped as well or something. No, you got to go into the day, in my opinion, just no matter what it takes, you know, no matter what the attitude of the people are when they show up to get in your boat, you got to make sure that they have a good time that day and, you know, do everything that you can. Now, I know you're probably not going to please every person and that's the way it is, but that's the way it is with anything in life is you're not going to ever please everyone. But I'm always out there making the best attempt to keep the day light, keep it fun, keep it simple, and, you know, make sure at the end of the day they got a good story to tell, you know, to whoever they're going back to.
Definitely half the battle. I don't know how you please somebody like Jeff, though. I mean, that's where it would probably get really difficult. Hopefully he never books you.
That's why nobody wants to guide me. Yeah, nobody. You know, one thing I do want to talk about is that you talk about like the dinner, we'll call it the dinner bite because everybody's going in for dinner and you guys are out there catching muskies. Who else told me about that? Was that Clayton? Did you talk about that on our round table? I feel like I've heard that a bunch recently, and it's one of those things that I'm super guilty of. I will absolutely, you know, get off the water. Like I'll go in the morning. Sometimes I'll fish till whatever, 10, 11, 12, whatever time the kids want to do whatever at. And then I won't go back out in the summertime until 7. Maybe I'm missing out. Maybe I should be on the water at 5. It's because I'm willing to bet that I'm not the only one that's missing this bite.
Yeah, it's we did actually talk about that. I believe it was in Milwaukee at the round table. There was something brought up about fishing pressure from somebody listening in the crowd. And I remember Gus and I touched on it and a few of the other guys. And I would 100% have to agree. And if we started at 3, you know, or maybe even sooner, I don't know about too much earlier than that, but it seems like from like 3 to 5, maybe is 5:30 or so on average, just looking back at all these fish slips and when fish get caught, that's probably our best, if not best, and it's the second best time of the afternoon when the most fish get caught week to week, day to day. And again, like right at sunset. There's always, for whatever reason, I have no idea, unless there's some kind of a moon major or something, weather change going on, there might be, you know, a bunch of fish caught between 5 and 7. But I would say that's probably over the years that I've been at least keeping track, that's probably when the least amount of fish are actually getting caught. And then from like that 8 to 9, 9 being as late as we can, you know, fish that sunset period, that ends up firing up again pretty good. Definitely right away. You know, not everybody can get on the water because a lot of people are, you know, working a normal job, so they don't get out until 5-6 o'clock in the evening for league, and you know, they complain because they're missing out on, you know, they show up at night and we talk about, you know, what fish were caught, how long they were, where they were caught, you know, what time they were caught, and a lot of grumbling going on because it seems like if you're not on the water at 4 o'clock ready to start fishing, you're going to miss out on probably one of the best bites of the evening almost every week.
Well, talking about taking breaks, it reminded me of a story. I'm trying to think, like 05, 06, somewhere in there, I was filming videos at that time with Redfin Outdoors, and I filmed Jason Hamernick and Billy Buechner in the Minnesota tournament trail. And they had been accused of a lot of things, like they were snagging fish, they were doing this, they were doing that. And so when I got in the boat with them and started filming them, pretty much put all that to rest. They weren't snagging anything. They were just catching fish because they were that good. But one of the cool things about that whole experience was, I'll never forget it. We were fishing in the middle of the tournament and Hamernick goes, all right, let's take a break. And I'm thinking to myself, guys, we're in a tournament. We're not going to take a break. And the next thing I know, we're pulling into a bar on Wax and we're going to eat some burgers. And so they literally, during tournament hours, would just say, all right, it's time for a break, and pull in. And as soon as we come back out from that dinner, it just resets your whole brain. And it just totally blew my mind because, I mean, these guys were dominating these tournaments. It was so insane. And here they are taking breaks in the middle of the day. Pretty wild.
Those are, and I'm not just saying that because I'm on here right now, but those are still some of my favorite videos that I've ever watched. And I'll never forget that tournament that they absolutely crushed everybody, just burning the snot out of those double eights or whatever, double showgirls, I think it was. It was absolutely insane. And no wonder they had to stop and take a break, is, you know, with the gear that they had back then. I know it's not horrible, but, you know, the stuff there is today even makes it so much easier for us to burn blades than what it did back then. And those guys were just powering them blades through the water. And yeah, I'm pretty sure that was a huge key to their success, and probably taking that break and resetting probably just made it all the easier for them to continue battling throughout the day. Whereas if they would have just stayed out and tried to power through, they would have burned out and slowed down, you know, and maybe they wouldn't have gotten the fish that they did in the afternoon, you know, or whatever, and won the tournament. So yeah, truly, those were some of the coolest videos I've still have ever seen.
Well, that's awesome, man. I appreciate that. It was a lot of fun to do. I don't know. It gave me the opportunity to share the boat with a lot of good fishermen, that's for sure. And we had just a ton of fun. And those two, in regards to those two, I don't know. There's not very many people that could do what they did at that time frame, that's for sure. And some of those videos exposed some of those crazy bites, you know. That was the first cold front of the year, and those fish would push shallow. And it was just astronomical. It really was. So I got to see some really cool stuff over the years doing that stuff. But, you know, it just blows my mind still today. I just can't how important that break might be, you know. And it's amazing. I've dealt with it in the past where I might have a client that says, "We're not taking a break. You're just trying to get out of work." And no, sometimes that break is what you need to reset and actually get things to work for you. So definitely something for all the listeners to think about. You know, when you're on the water, quit beating yourself up. Make the best of your time out there.
Yeah, 100%. I always, you know, it doesn't matter what the time of year is. I always bring stuff for trolling. You know, if I got a client out for a full day or something, and, you know, they start getting winded to be like, "Hey, we can stop for lunch," you know. And if you're worried about, you know, getting your full time in and the boat will go an hour later, I don't care, you know. Or if you just want to take a break and go trolling around for a little bit, see some more water, we can do that too. I just like to keep, you know, every option open that I possibly can, you know, to help these guys get a break and make sure they don't get burnt out, because you're 100% right on that.
Well, let's shift gears and let's start talking about the PMTT and kind of how you ended up getting into that and what it is that makes you, you know, what feeds the fuel there for you to go tournament fishing.
Yeah, so I started with the PMTT a year that I fished with a good friend of mine and longtime Muskie League partner, Josh Sullivan. We fished the Spring Classic tournament run by Muskies Inc. in Eagle River week before, and I think I'm pretty sure, if my mind serves me correctly, we ended up taking second place that year, got on a really good bite. And we were all fired up, obviously. And we were like, "Oh, we're unstoppable. Oh, there's a spot open in the PMTT. Maybe we should try our luck in Eagle River tournament." So, you know, we put down the massive amount of money at the time to get into that, you know, hoping on a dream, you know, that we could compete. And I think we ended up not doing well. We didn't do very good on Saturday for sure. On Sunday, we ended up catching the big fish of the day towards the end of the day, and right afterwards lost another one that would have put us in, I think, like the top five. And we missed the top 10 by maybe, you know, a small fish or something like that. But that kind of got me, you know, into the tournament fishing, really hooked on it. Obviously, if we can do good and then maybe almost, you know, per se do really well in the first PMTT I ever fished, you know, we did take a little bit of money away from that with the big fish of the day, but I was totally hooked and love kind of the competitive aspect of, you know, hey, you're out there fishing against the best of the best. You know, obviously at the time I was like, "Oh, I want to see how I measure up to these guys and see how I can do fishing against them." And, you know, over the years, that still is definitely a part of it. And I've been fishing tournaments with a few different people And the PMTT, you know, like tournament, usually we just fish the Eagle River one up until 3 years ago when I decided to try and do the trail and got a really good friend of mine to join in. And we ended up getting sponsored enough to the point where we don't have to pay for any entry fees. And a lot of our travel and a bunch of stuff is kind of paid for. So it's not costing us too much anymore. And I think as long as that can continue, I'm going to keep doing it. But what had kind of has transitioned now to me is the people that we've met over the years in the trail and the friends that we've made are just absolutely irreplaceable. And it has turned into more of a camaraderie thing than it is trying to make money thing. I've realized that I'm definitely not going to get rich fishing tournaments. I'm not that good. When it's my time, it's my time. When we're on, we're on. And you know, and when we're not, then we're not. And you take the good with the bad. And it stinks, obviously, getting waxed out there. But then when you do really well in a tournament, you know, there's no better feeling than getting up on that podium, you know, and getting a check or the trophy or whatever. But I'll tell you what, the friends that we've made over the years and how much fun we have traveling in these tournaments now and going to new bodies of water that we've never fished before is more important and more value to me than anything else. We travel now with two other teams, actually three, but we stay with two other teams. We stay with Jeremy and Trevor Barber from Eagle River, and then Gus and Max Manti. Gus is of Eagle River too. He's, you know, a fishing guide. He's been on the podcast before, and his brother Max, they fished a trail for the first time last year and ended up getting team of the year, which is absolutely incredible. I know they have not fished a PMTT event and not placed top 10 yet. So a couple really good young sticks, really nice guys down to earth. And we have a really solid core group of guys that we just kind of go and we enjoy, you know, our time with each other outside of the, you know, when we're not competing against each other in the tournament. Obviously, when we're on the water, it's all, you know, against each other and, you know, we're doing our best to win and stuff, but really good people to hang out with, you know, when we're not fishing. And any chance we get to go to like these events and stuff and see, you know, the rest of the guys in the trail, we only get to see these people, you know, a couple times a year. Everybody's busy, it seems like, but we'll just kind of take those few weekends or weeks out of the summer. And, you know, it's our time to go and chop it up with these guys. And that has been so much fun. And we've truly enjoyed every part of this whole trail and, you know, the PMTT and these other tournaments and the friends that we've made.
Well, you're probably lucky that our friend Jeff hasn't been fishing the PMTT for how many years now, Jeff?
Oh boy. Five, I'm guessing. Six, maybe. I don't know. Time flies so much, Brad, that I can't tell you for sure. I'm guessing it's got to be six. But yeah, he's super lucky that I'm not fishing it. I would definitely probably take a 10th place away from somebody.
How many years did you do it?
Oh, boy. I think I only did the full trail 1 year, but then we fished, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years in a row. I fished with Stevie at least one or two events a couple times. So I know we'd always fish the Eagle River one. And then we would also go, if we did well there, then we would go fish, you know, whatever, the next one to qualify for the championship. So we did that a few times. It was fun. I liked it. It was a good time. I've talked about it before in the podcast. I always enjoyed it. I like the, you know, the camaraderie and all that stuff. You know, one thing I do have to think though, Clayton, I made a note. It said you kind of wanted to stack yourself up against the best, right? What is it, you know, in fishing these tournaments, you've done it enough now and you guys have had a lot of success too, but like, what do you suppose that separates the best anglers from your average angler? Like what helps take those guys to the next level?
I think it's probably being able to adapt and definitely learn, you know, if for those anglers that have never been on, you know, a body of water and you go there to do a tournament. And I got to say, like for Gus and Max Manti, you know, they fished, you know, three new bodies of water last year that they've never been on and they caught fish in every single one. So take somebody like them. They're able to go and break down a new body of water within a couple of days and get confident enough to fish a tournament and, you know, and then catch fish in a tournament, even though the weather always seems to change. It's never consistent. Nothing's ever consistent with these fish. So to be able to adapt and, you know, still get on fish even when the weather completely changes is what separates, you know, the good from the best. And in the championship last year on the triple flowage, Nick and I were on a pile of fish again, just like we were the first year that we fished the trail was there the same time. And we were fighting for team of the year that year. We were in first place going into the championship and we found fish and we just couldn't keep them pinned. It's just not our time, I guess. We ended up losing 6 fish in the first 2 days and didn't qualify to fish the last day. We were done. Last year, we go in with the same, you know, basically trying to keep an open mind about it and forget about the past. Found a pile of fish again. We were very, you know, excited and very confident going into it. And right off the bat, we go 0-for-5 again. And basically, I was ready to leave halfway through the first day because I felt for sure we were cursed. But we turned it around at the end of the first day. We ended up getting one right at the end of the day. Going into day 2, all of a sudden we have confidence and we start sticking fish and we stuck 3 more. And we were basically within, you know, a couple points of being in first place going into the last day. Well, then the weather changed again and the spot that we were fishing changed or dried up or something because we were fishing with multiple other teams in the top 10, including Senate's. We're frequenting the area that we were fishing. And all of a sudden, within the first hour, everyone had kind of left and the Senate's never came back. And we realized that something had changed that they figured out, that they knew. And we didn't really have a backup plan. We didn't know what to do. They went and pounded a whole pile of fish and smoked everybody in the last day and won the championship. And we never got a bite. And so there you go. You know, they adapted. Now he is on his home water. Ty was, so that helped a lot. I'm sure he probably had a little bit more of an idea of where to go and what to do, but we were absolutely stunned. Like just had no answers for what had happened and didn't really have anywhere else to go.
You know, I want to say that story you talked about where they pivoted, caught a bunch of fish. You guys didn't pivot. I've definitely been there in tournaments, and I will say that is one of those things that it's, as a musky angler, it's very hard, I feel, to like, especially in tournament situation, to just, you know, cut bait on a pattern that you had that you either were catching fish or seeing fish, and then literally having something change the next day and you're not seeing them or catching them, but like it's musky fishing, right? So you're just like, oh, well, they still got to be here. We just need to wait for the window to open up. And like, I mean, it really separates the really good anglers from the rest, I guess, when you're able to just, you know, like, yep, this pattern's not happening. I got to move. And I feel as musky anglers, again, myself included, I think we hold on to patterns that were good yesterday. We hold on to them for too long the next day. I would, it just seems that way. And I'm, like I said, I'm guilty of that. And if you can make that switch, all the power to you, and you'll definitely in a lot of cases, I'm guessing reap the rewards.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like part of the problem, I guess too, was that when we first got into this area the next, you know, on the last day in the morning, we started seeing fish right away on our electronics. And what ended up being is I think maybe a couple of them were some leftover burned fish that we'd already caught. And the rest of them that we sat on for over an hour, we finally got one to eat and it ended up being a pike. So what we were looking at weren't even muskies anymore. We were actually chasing pike around for a long time. So that kind of stunk too. It kind of held us in the zone a little bit longer than what we probably should have. We probably should have made a move or tried something else sooner, but you know, obviously, I think anyone would admit how hard that would be if you can still see something on, you know, your electronics that's saying there's probably still fish here, but they're not biting for whatever reason.
How much do you rely on your electronics, especially when you're tournament fishing or guiding? I mean, is the electronics the biggest key to you?
I guess I do rely quite a bit on my electronics. Like on most of these bodies of water that aren't my home water, if my electronics went dead, I'll be completely honest, I would probably panic a little bit. Now, I think we could probably keep fishing and, you know, get safely around from point A to point B. But I use Humminbird electronics, and I use the combination of 360 and side imaging to fish structure and areas more accurately or as accurately as possible, being able to read that 360. The 360, and it's not so much seeing fish as it is seeing the structure and seeing the structure before you get to it and being able to maneuver around it and without running certain things over. And obviously, if you get a lower lazy follow or a fish that follows for a little bit, if you can pull those fish out of the weeds into a little bit more open water off the break slightly, a lot of times we will get to see them at some point on the 360 or side imaging. And that, you know, truly does help so much. I do use live imaging too, the Mega Live. It's all kind of networked together on my boat. And obviously we can't use it during the PMTT, but for pre-fishing, we'll use it probably half the time. When I'm guiding, I probably use the live maybe a third of the time. And really, maybe more so, slightly different from what most people, the live imaging is just another tool that kind of helps me really just stay on structure and fish structure accurately. And then if we do get a follow, to try and find that fish again before it makes it back into the weeds to maybe for a cast back fish. And we do catch a lot of fish on cast backs because of the 360 and the live imaging. But I would have to say that if I got rid of my live, it wouldn't break my heart. The 360 is probably the most important electronics tool in my boat besides a trolling motor.
So if you were going to pick 360 over side view, say, on your trolling motor, would you still go 360 first?
100%, yeah.
So explain to me why. Because I'm 360. I literally sold my 360. Once I went to a Garmin trolling motor, so I have my side view right on my trolling motor. And yep. I look at it as a 360 unit in itself because I can just turn that trolling motor and boom, boom, I've got 360. So I'm kind of curious what you feel is your advantage using that 360.
I guess I'd have to be honest, and I haven't seen that Garmin trolling motor work, so I can't judge it against that. But I've been running Trovas on my boats forever. And the 360 is nice because it's constantly rotating, even though it takes a little bit to update, it updates every 180, degrees. And as long as I'm working slow enough, I don't really use it so much for trolling, but for casting and structure fishing, as long as you're working slow enough, it updates fast enough for you to see the structure. Once you learn what you're looking at, it's such a great tool for fishing structure. And then when it comes to I keep it on a separate pole, obviously, a separate mount. It's not on my trolling motor at all. But as far as using like a side imaging on the bottom of a trolling motor, I have seen that, used a little bit. And I did have a transducer. I put a side imaging one on the bottom of my Trova once before 360 came out. And it just ended up being more of a hassle to kind of turn that trolling motor when I'm trying to structure fish. I'm already moving the trolling motor enough to kind of adjust and make minor adjustments to keep the boat going the right direction, that for me to turn it to try and scan or see something a little bit differently, it was one extra step that just made me fumble a little bit, I guess. Whereas you put the 360 in and you let it go and you don't worry about it and use a trolling motor to just, keep yourself moving in the right direction, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I'm just kind of curious. And, where I really seen the 360 shine was when you're fishing a lot of bare sand, right? If you're fishing tons of weeds, it didn't seem to benefit me as much. Now, keep in mind, that's all relative, right? I'm just saying all in all.
Sure,
but
sure.
I definitely, once I got the side view on the front, I utilize it more so for seeing where that weed line is, where I'm casting on those weeds. There was certain times of the year, maybe in June or even in October, where you see a lot of these fish transition to more sand. I found it to be super useful for locating fish. But I can see it, on new bodies of water, right? Our first shoot that we did with BAM 10,000 cast was 3 years ago down in Iowa. 360 was superb. It was insane how many fish we were seeing on it, right? So if you were moving with your side imaging, I definitely think that we could have did the same thing. But a lot of times we were working a spot and then all of a sudden these fish would pop up, maybe on the other side of the boat that we weren't even fishing. And also relating to some of that structure that you weren't necessarily aware was there as well. So, no, I mean, I think there's a benefit from both. The other thing that 360 could provide is as you're drifting, it's still working, right? And that's where I found, once I had side view on my trolling motor, now I have that at 45 or 90 degrees and I'm drift fishing, I still can see underneath the boat. So I thought that was a really cool part of that too. So there's uses for all of it. It's amazing. I mean, I don't think there's one catch-all solution, and you hit it on the head, you're using everything. So definitely a key component to fishing good and smart.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I guess too, the way you're saying, you know, the drift fishing, I really don't do a whole lot of that around here. I would, or, you know, home in the smaller lakes. And I think also with like the amount of fishing pressure, like let's just bring back the Eagle River chain again. The 360 comes in so handy, like I said, so you don't run structure over and you see it before it gets to you. But what I'm seeing and looking for is it seems like you really have to be more technical around here than a lot of other places with how you control a boat and where you're casting. All these weed lines don't run a straight line. They have all these little indents and these little bump outs. And I can't even tell you how many times those fish are sitting right in those tiny little pockets or right on the little tips of those weeds. And I can accurately point in the right direction for, you know, my clients to cast to, or, you know, my partner, or, you know, cast myself at, you know, trying to fish these spots and just pick these little tiny little, you know, changes in the weed lines or, you know, the rock points or rock bars or something. The 360 definitely helps, you know, be able to fish a lot more, I guess, accurately as far as that's concerned. And I do understand too, once you get into that drifting where side imaging just off the back of the boat really doesn't work anymore. But if you've had it up on the trolling motor, like you said, and you kind of turn it so that, you know, it's moving the right direction based on how you're drifting, that totally would solve that issue quite a bit, I would think.
Yeah, the other component too, you know, that maybe you didn't touch on, but it, like you said, it's maybe not just fit that you're looking for, right? It might be a clump of weeds that you weren't sure was there, and it might be on the other side of the boat from where the break line is that you're fishing. So they all serve their own purpose, that's for sure. You know, one thing that we didn't touch on, are you doing some video stuff that you're putting on YouTube, Clayton?
Yes, I am.
We didn't talk about that.
No, so yeah, that's a good point. Part of what I do, I guess, is I try and film as much as possible, and especially with friends. I haven't been filming too much with clients yet. Once in a while, I'll ask them, you kind of feel them out and see what they're, you know, how they're feeling, if they want their stuff on, you know, YouTube or not. Or some people really want it. Like they'd be like, oh yeah, you know, if you could get it on video, that'd be really cool. And some people kind of, I don't really want to be out there, and that's fine. But got a lot of really good video this last year. I mean, I spent by far the most time on the water than I ever have this last summer. And we did a lot of filming and we got a lot of fish on film. Probably the coolest and best trip I've ever been on was this last year's trip to Lake of the Woods. 7 days with our local chapter, Headwaters chapter of Muskies, Inc. It's their club outing at Red Wing Lodge in Sabascong Bay. And a bunch of my friends have been going up there and doing that for years. And I went probably 4 years ago and fished for the first time up there. And it was really good. We did some filming and I didn't really kind of break it up or put it on YouTube the way I probably should have, or wasn't super happy with it. This year we had a goal, well, a lot of goals, but one goal was to try and get a video for every day that we were fishing up there. And that also meant that we needed to try and catch a fish every single day that we were up there to make it happen. And we made it happen. We ended up getting 27 muskies in my boat and 71 total in our cabin for the week, which was absolutely incredible. And some of the coolest eats and footage that I could ever imagine happened up there. And those fish are just so much fun because their willingness to eat boat side in the figure eight or just come out of nowhere and just absolutely inhale or crush your bait with, you know, not holding anything back and, you know, just going absolutely ballistic. It's just such a cool area to fish, really beautiful up there. And the fish are very nice. Like we caught a ton of fish that were over 44 inches just in my boat. And, you know, we got a 50 3/4 and 2 48s were the three biggest and had opportunities at probably another half a dozen that were, I would say, over 47. Some absolute giants that we saw too. So the potential for giants is there as long as well with numbers, but been chopping those up the last couple of weeks and starting to get them up on YouTube. I've been doing a video a week. They're coming out on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. Hopefully I can keep up pace and do it every Saturday until I get through this series, but it's turning out really good. I'm very excited with how it looks. Starting to gain a little bit of traction. I'm getting more views and a few more followers, which with YouTube, it's never really been so much about the followers and the views as it's been about just putting together my memories and putting them somewhere so that anybody that wants to see them can view them, but also so that I can remember what exactly happened and how it all played out. And wherever it goes as far as, you know, gaining traction and getting viewers and whatnot. I appreciate everybody that views and comments on it and subscribes. And I really hope people are enjoying it. And if not, then I guess they don't have to watch it. There's so much content out there nowadays. It's really hard to be competitive in that market. And I'm not really sure that I'm trying to be competitive in a YouTube market as much as I'm just trying to share my memories.
It's a good way.
I think that's really cool. One of the things that kind of surprises me is that your clients don't want to be necessarily on that. And maybe it's because they don't want to be on YouTube. But I mean, just like you said, you're preserving some history and you're going to be able to go back on that, say 40 years from now and say, hey, you know, I did that and it was a blast. And it's going to remind you of all those good times on the water.
Yeah, most definitely. And I got to be honest, like not to like kind of brag about how good we did, but we had so much action that I already, like, as I'm going back through all these video clips and starting to break it down, I'm like, oh man, I totally forgot that happened. Or wow, I would have forgotten all about that fish, you know. And as I post them, then Ryan, who was, you know, my boat partner up there, he was like, oh, I totally forgot we caught that fish. And you know, where were we on this day, you know? And we're trying to like remember already, even though it was only a few months ago, where exactly we were. It was just such a frenzy of a week and so much action and stuff. It's a good thing that I documented it as well as I did. Every time we would come in for lunch or, you know, at the end of the day, I would go to the computer, pull all the footage off my SD cards, and right away I would label it like day one, day three, this fish, that fish. And it has made it so easy for me to chop it up this time, where normally I'd just kind of pull it and put it all in a folder, and then I'd spend hours and hours just trying to sort through and figure out what was what and where it all, you know, where it all went. But I took really good notes this time, and it's been a pleasure to edit this stuff versus other years.
Must be nice to catch so many fish on a trip you forget about muskies. Like, I can remember all both of the muskies that I caught the last 3 years. It's incredible.
I never would have imagined something like that would have happened. It was quite an experience.
Very cool.
I think he's smarter than both of us, Jeff, because he's actually spending the time recording exactly what took place. Because I can tell you, it's amazing to me, but when I sit down and start editing the TV show, I don't even know. I mean, I'm like having to review every second of whatever we filmed to put it all together. It's kind of bizarre and it's mind-boggling. I understand. You forget about a lot of weird stuff that took place, right? I mean, last year it was a lawn chair. We caught a lawn chair. And I totally forgot about it until I started reviewing the footage, you know, and a lot of that stuff, I guarantee you I'm missing stuff when I'm laying out the TV show, just because it comes oblivious and everything kind of runs together when you spend that much time behind the camera on the water. And then the editing side is another whole package to it. So I get it. I understand. And it might not be the number of fish. It might just be, it was 2 months ago and maybe I got dementia. I don't know. It's kind of crazy how it all works.
Yeah. Sometimes I worry that I'm losing my mind. So I need to take as good a notes as possible so I don't forget.
Well, realistically, Brad, if we were smart, we would get done, film it, and then we'd just go back in the next 24 hours and edit it. But none of us do that.
Well, that'd be so hard to do,
you know, but that would be the way to go about doing it. You'd be done. All the details would be fresh in your head and you'd be fine. But you could be like me. I'm going to go try to edit some video that I shot 3 years ago. You think how well is that going to go?
Yeah, it'll take you some time. I honestly, though, I've tried that, Jeff. You know, I've thought to myself, man, if I just get after it right away when you get home. But when you get home, there's other work to do. So you just kind of, it gets pushed to the side, right? It's kind of crazy. No, I don't know.
Well, my dad used to always say, the work that can get done anytime gets done no time, right? And so the editing part, I mean, can essentially get done anytime. And so then it gets done at no time.
There's a lot of truth to that, right? The other old saying is, don't put off what you can do today, till tomorrow. So I don't know. It's a tough one, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Why do today what you can put off till tomorrow, right? That's how that goes.
Yep.
I gotta say, Brad, if you're not doing it, you know, when you guys pull your chips and start putting your stuff on an SD card or, you know, external hard drive or something, that extra 15 minutes to just label what each, you know, chip was about, if you can take that little bit of time, it's just going to save you so much, especially if you're, you know, if you're doing what I'm doing, you're shooting the season or the whole summer, you know, or the whole whatever musky season. And then you go back and do this in the winter time when, you know, when I have a little bit extra free time, it's just been a game changer having some of that stuff labeled, at least like the day and, you know, what's on it. Like if there's a fish on there, or if there's anything funny that happened, you know, taking that little bit extra time to label that stuff has just been clutch in the long run.
I'm sure it really is. I mean, I can only imagine. I used to do that better back in the day, but you know, all the technology has gotten so much better. So you can scrub through video way faster than you used to be able to and things like that. So, I mean, some of the technology has benefited us in that aspect as well, but it's weird, man. It's just, I don't understand. You know, you just put it off, I guess. And I should make notes at the end of the day on my phone. I mean, it'd be super easy to do, right?
Yeah.
But will I? Probably not. It's kind of like making notes when you're musky fishing, right? Oh, we got this. The wind was from here. The water temps were this, blah, blah, blah. And I did that for a couple of years, but man, I haven't done it for so long. I don't know if I could start now. You know,
I used to do that too, and it started to become not fun. And when something becomes not fun and I don't want to do it anymore, and you know, it might shy me away from doing something else or another part of it that was fun. So as soon as it becomes a little bit too much like work, then I'll be like, you know what, is it that important to me? I'm gonna be out on the water anyways. You know, and remember the, you know, the really good stuff whenever I can, and hopefully forget about the stuff that didn't go so well.
All right, Clayton, before I let you go, I have one question that I've been thinking about. And initially I was going to do good and bad, but I want to keep it on the positive side. So lately it seems like if you're dealing with winternet still on social media, you know, it's forward-facing sonar is going to ruin musky fishing and all fisheries, and there aren't enough muskies being stocked. Let's talk a little bit about positive stuff in the North Woods. What's something that you can find that's a positive when it comes to musky fishing in the North Woods?
Well, I would say the stocking has been good enough in the North Woods. And as much as people think that the fishing's going down because of forward-facing sonar, it's getting worse. You know, a couple things. I think that the musky fishing is getting better and better. I think quality of fish, the size of fish that we're catching are getting better. Maybe not as many. Although then there's times when it seems like there's nothing but small ones and there's a pile of them. So as far as like the fishing, I think the fishing continues to improve. I think the way that people are handling fish, the catch and release, the taking care of the fish is definitely getting better and better all the time. And, you know, because of that, I think the mortality rate is better on these fish. People are paying attention to water temperatures and, you know, and how long they're keeping these fish out of the water, having better hookout tools and, you know, all the improvements that have come through the industry over the years as far as, you know, being able to keep fish alive in nets and, you know, the different tools and stuff that they have. So I think that's all positive. I think forward-facing sonar honestly is going to, I almost feel like the fish kind of get used to it and they're gonna feel that and stop biting baits from boats before honestly, like we ruin the fishing population. These fish seem like they adapt. Every year it changes. Every year there's a new bait. There's a new, you know, style of fishing that's working better. And it already, I can see the effects a little bit of forward facing sonar to where that's not, I don't think it's going to ruin anything. I think honestly, if anything, those fish are going to get used to that constant sonar hitting them and they're just going to swim away from it and not go after, you know, whatever is coming from that constant pinging on. But as far as like the industry also is and people getting involved, I like seeing we do have a bunch of younger kids and youth that are getting involved in the musky fishing in our league. And, you know, you're seeing them in the tournaments and different things. And the more that we can bring, you know, youth into it, the better. And the few that are in it are starting to do really well. And, you know, you're seeing them, they're getting promoted, you know, through Muskies Inc. And there's all sorts of different classes. And even in school now, there's fishing leagues, which is, and, you know, different teams, fishing teams. I think that's awesome. So we've got that going on up by us. And I think that's really good, you know, to definitely try and get more youth involved.
Perfect answer. Well, Clayton, if people are listening to this podcast and they want to get in touch with you to book a trip to go fishing this year, how do they go about doing that?
Sure. Probably the easiest way is to call or text me. If I don't answer, leave me a voicemail. My number is 715-891-1046. I'm on Facebook, my name, Clayton Spies, and then I also have a Thistle Dew Outdoor Adventures page on Facebook. I have Instagram, which I check quite a bit, so you can message me on that as well. It's under just my name, Clayton Spies. My YouTube channel is Thistle Dew Outdoor Adventures. I think the handle is Thistle Dew Outdoors-Clayton. If you want to check that out, I hope you like it. Subscribe if you do and let me know in some comments or whatever. I'd just be happy to hear from people. I love hearing comments. They're bad. I mean, if somebody's got something bad, they want to pick apart my video, that's cool. I'll read it. I'll try and explain what had happened, you know, and how it all kind of went down in my eyes and, you know, see if maybe we can make it a learning experience for myself or the person that was watching it. So yeah, I'd love to get out in the boat. I do have quite a few openings yet this year. So it's not really full yet. There's certain pink days or, you know, good moon days that are filled up, but we got a lot of openings yet. Give me a shout if you want to get out.
All right. You know, I love me some YouTube comments. They're awesome. I got a few of them in mind that they're just funny. But anyways.
Yeah, you just got to chuckle at them. Try and make a good situation out of it.
Yeah. A different day. Well, I'll talk about some YouTube comments. But anyways, like I said, they're always fun. I love Keyboard Warriors. It's great. Anyways, Clayton, I want to thank you for your time, coming out, talking musky fishing with us. I hope that you have yourself a fantastic start to the season. Hopefully at some point we will get you back on the podcast and we'll kind of talk about what's going on in the Northwoods at some point this summer. And for our listeners, we want to thank everybody for tuning in again for another episode. And we will have another one again next Wednesday. Good luck fishing. Thanks everybody for listening.
Hey, thanks guys.